Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of T. Rowe Price's Confident Conversations on Retirement. I'm Michael Davis, head of Global Retirement Strategy and host of Season 1 of the podcast. I'm excited to be back as your host for this special episode. Over the years, we've had so many incredible guests, unforgettable moments, and profound insights shared right here with you on the show. So today, we're going to take a walk down memory lane with a best of episode. We'll revisit some of the most impactful, inspiring, and just plain fun clips from past episodes. But before we dive in, I want to thank each and every one of you for your continued support. Whether you're a longtime listener or new to the podcast, we couldn't be happier to have you involved, and we could not do this without you. So sit back, relax, get a bag of popcorn, and enjoy these highlights from the past seasons of our Confident Conversations on Retirement podcast. First, let's kick things off with a clip from our first season where we discuss the five W's of retirement. In this episode, I was joined by two of our favorite guests, certified financial planner professionals, Stuart Ritter and Lindsay Theodore. Stuart and Lindsay share some invaluable insights on the five W's of retirement, which is a framework designed to help you shape a clear, confident vision of your future and the importance of visualizing your retirement. Here's a snippet of that conversation. I know everybody's dying to know what the five W's are. This is going to be a really fascinating conversation. We know that retirement is a really big decision, and it's one that we know we all want to get right. There are both financial considerations to think about and lifestyle decisions that need to be made as well. So if you don't have it all figured out, we want our listeners to hopefully get some confidence and some additional direction from this episode and just not let that be a confidence killer. This exercise of answering the five W's, we think, can help people with focusing on the things they need to know, things they want to get out of retirement, and give them an idea of what they may need or want to do more thinking about. So, Stuart, I'm going to start with you. People are dying to know, what are the five W's of retirement?
Here they are. Why, who, what, where, and when. Why, who, what, where, when. And the reason we've consolidated this into five W's is to give people a framework to work from in order to get a more concrete vision of what their retirement will be. Very often, if I'm doing a presentation live and ask people to just close their eyes for a few seconds and think about what they envision when they think about their own retirement, I get answers like travel and grandkids and golf and sleeping late and all kinds of great stuff like that. But it's not concrete enough for people to really think that they have an idea of how to get there, of what the there is going to be, and then the steps they can take today. So as you pointed out, they can feel more confident that they're ready for whatever vision they have for retirement. So we've put these five W's together in order to give people some structure around it.
Really interesting. And you mentioned this point about sort of a vision and having this vision around retirement. Why is that so important?
There are a couple of things a vision can give you. It gives you more clarity about what your retirement is going to be. It moves beyond just kind of the superficial initial reaction and helps you start thinking through what your lifestyle is going to be, who you'll spend time with, what you're going to do. It also allows you to then start sharing that vision with other people. And that can be members of your family, certainly a spouse or partner if you have one, extended family, and then the professionals you might be working with, a financial professional, a healthcare professional. And it puts it all in a position that people start getting more understanding of what you're thinking about. You can start getting feedback. You can start adjusting what your vision might be. So having that vision, answering the five W's, gives you that clarity.
Lindsay, any thoughts on that question?
I would completely agree with Stuart. Putting together a vision of what you want your retirement to look like is essential. And you'll see that the five W's really focus much more on the non-financial aspects of financial planning. And that's because in order to make all the sacrifices that one really needs to make in order to plan and save, I think it's really important that you put down on paper and share with your loved ones what you want retirement to really look like for you and what the second and third options are if it doesn't go as planned, because it doesn't always go that way.
That's exactly right. A vision is so very important. And now back to the five W's of retirement. Let's start with the why. Stuart, I'm going to start with you.
Let me define it. It's people thinking about what gives them meaning and fulfillment. So my first question to folks about why would be, what is your why today? What gives you fulfillment and meaning today? And after you've spent some time thinking about that and understanding it, then start thinking about what's going to give you fulfillment and meaning when you get to retirement. Let me give you a quick story about someone who unfortunately had not spent time thinking about their why in retirement. When we do research about retirement, we do it in a lot of different ways, and one of them is focus groups. And we brought in a focus group of recent retirees once, folks who either themselves or had a spouse who had retired in the previous about 5 years or so. And the moderator was going around and just asking people to introduce themselves and just explain what their experience with retirement was. And this one gentleman used a word I had never heard anybody use before to describe his experience with retirement. He said, "I failed retirement." I'm thinking, how do you fail retirement? Who's assigning a grade to this? How does that work? And here's what he told us. He said he had gotten to the point in his life where the money was there. He had enough. He had looked at the retirement balance and Social Security, what his expenses might be, had enough money to retire. And he said, so I did. I went into the office the next day and announced my retirement. The first couple of weeks were okay. I slept late. I puttered around the house. And then I realized, well, I'm down to alphabetizing the spice cabinet, and now I'm kind of moping around the house, and I'm bickering with my wife just to give myself something to do. I was getting miserable. I was failing retirement. And the reason he was failing retirement had nothing to do with the money, and it had everything to do with the why. He didn't have one. He didn't have something that was giving him meaning and fulfillment in retirement because he didn't even know he should be thinking about it, let alone having spent some time answering that particular question. So the why gives people that context around which it'll provide a reason to get out of bed in the morning. And thinking about the why helps people understand today what their meaning and fulfillment is, and then prepare to make sure that they have sources of meaning and fulfillment in retirement. That way, they won't fail.
Really thoughtful, Stuart. I assume the end of that story, he went back to work.
Yeah. Yes, he did. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How about you, Lindsay? Any thoughts on the question of why?
No, that's a great story, and it's very relevant. I think a lot of folks don't give a lot of thought to that. They think a lot about, have I saved enough? Could I financially sustain retiring now? But they don't think about what they'll miss about being in the workplace. They don't think about how they'll spend their time, what they value. And so it does become kind of this thing where one angel on one shoulder telling them, relax, and the other angel is telling them, you should be doing something, because they're going from careers where they were go-getters, they constantly had a checklist, a to-do list, the next rung of the ladder they wanted to climb. It can be a difficult transition. So I think it's important to differentiate between retiring from something and retiring to something.
Yes.
Some of us want to retire from something because we're just fed up. But we need to also know, what are we retiring to? How are we going to spend those hours and make it really valuable? But also, how are we going to be kind to ourselves to realize you don't have to get tons of things done in retirement? That's the point.
What Lindsay's been talking about is the reason we put these five W's together, because too often, people just focus on the financial side. Well, where's the best tax option for us? And not really thinking through the other factors that come into play, the who, the what, the where, all of those lifestyle issues. All we're saying is just make this a holistic decision. Take into account all the factors, not just the financial, but also the non-financial, more emotional things. And that will lead you to a point where you're probably making a better decision. You're more confident about the decision. There'll be fewer surprises. There will still be surprises in retirement, but maybe a couple fewer because you've thought through both sides of it, the financial and non-financial.
So that was absolutely fantastic. Stuart and Lindsay gave us a lot to think about and did it in such a fun way, and Stuart's stories are always a fan favorite. If you missed this episode, I highly recommend going back to give it a full listen. It's a great reminder of how retirement is more than just a financial decision. It's about envisioning a future filled with purpose and meaning. In the next episode titled, Why You Should Pay Yourself First, our Season 2 host, Christine Akins, Head of Individual Investor Client Engagement, sits down with certified financial planner professionals Judy Ward and Jennifer Almeida. to dive into why starting to save early is so important. They discuss the importance of prioritizing your savings, sharing actionable insights on overcoming common hurdles to savings, from living paycheck to paycheck to market fears. I'm pretty certain that all of these are issues that a lot of us can identify with. So let's listen.
We know that saving just doesn't happen by itself. So having some benchmarks to help understand if you're making progress in the right way is super helpful. So help us to understand, how important is it to start saving early?
The earlier you can save for retirement, the longer your money can benefit from compounded growth. And that's just a fancy term that means your money is earning money. For young investors that can start in their 20s or early 30s, compound growth can be magic. Time is a young person's greatest ally. Now, if you're getting a late start, don't despair. You can still make significant progress towards your retirement goals.
Judy, thanks for those insights. Jen, would you like to add to that?
I would say that just like anything else, the sooner you get started, the easier it's going to be to get into the groove. Think of a snowball rolling down the hill. If I'm standing at the top of the hill and I start rolling a ball of snow down versus Judy standing in the middle of the hill rolling her snowball down the hill, who's going to have a larger snowball at the bottom of the hill? It is really important to start early. It makes it easier to build.
What do you think keeps people from saving?
The ones that I hear stated the most are living paycheck to paycheck or being afraid or unsure of the stock market. So when it comes to living paycheck to paycheck, there's a belief that we just don't have enough to save, that if only we made a little bit more money, we could save a little bit more. But there have been studies that show that if you make more money, you tend to spend more money, not save more money. So first, I do want to acknowledge that some folks really don't have enough to save. I grew up in a low-income household, single mother, five children. She really didn't have an extra penny. The harsh truth is that there's a lot of pressure from society to keep up with the Joneses, and some of us are constantly spending on things just to compare ourselves to others or because we see others have some things that we want. But if we want to see results, we need to make some sacrifices. Often when people find out what I do for a living, we get into conversations about how to be able to save more money. I was speaking to this lady a while ago who was going on and on about how she did not have the income that would enable her to save for retirement. As we were walking out to her vehicle, I noticed the brand new car stickers on her window. And I thought to myself, here's this lady who's saying that she doesn't have any money to save, but clearly just made a decision about spending her money on this new car. Meanwhile, my car is a 2011 two-door coupe that I paid $8,000 for and have been running into the ground for the last several years. So keep in mind that with every dollar you spend, you're choosing to put those dollars towards something today instead of your income in the future. It could be big stuff like your housing and your vehicle. It could also be small stuff like looking at your insurance premiums, your subscriptions, memberships, the coffee that you drink in the morning and how much money you're spending there. But if you can pinch the pennies, you'll have more money to save towards retirement. The other reason why people are having a difficult time saving is because they're afraid of the market. Maybe they just don't want to put their money in out of fear of losing it to their investments. But a lot of this fear comes from misconceptions about the market. So I would encourage people to get more educated, get more exposure. That's going to build your confidence. Look at the facts. Take a look at the historical returns of the S&P 500 index. You'll notice that in every 20-year rolling period from 1970 through the end of 2021, it's yielded a positive average return. And when there are negative returns, usually it has a smaller impact in the grand scheme of things.
Judy, we'd love to hear your perspectives.
I would say a lot of it is having competing priorities. And Jen, I think you talked really nicely about priorities, and we need to be intentional. So if retirement savings is going to be a priority, we need to be intentional about that, as well as our other priorities. I know
You talked about the morning coffee and the morning lattes. And I have to be honest, if your morning latte gives you joy, then get the morning latte. Maybe it's something else you need to reprioritize so that you can make those retirement savings. I think a lot of it, too, is people just, they don't know how to start. I find also with a lot of women, women want to know everything before they get started. And this is where I say, just put a plan together, keep it simple. If you have a 401k plan, take full advantage of the company match, and then work up to the 15% if you can. Use an investment that's already allocated for you. You don't have to make those investment decisions. You don't have to be that investment guru just to get started. I always say, start now, learn later. So really be intentional, have a plan. We talk about 15% of your income, start where you can, move up to that, and choose investments that are kind of packaged up for you so you don't have to make those decisions right away, and automate what you can. So again, I think it's just not knowing where to start. Keep it simple and just get started.
Those are some really sound steps for anybody to follow. Thank you, Judy. Let's continue to build on that. Jen, how can we make saving easier for people so it's more of a habit?
I think it's important to focus on the vision. Get excited about the small sacrifices you might be making to get there. Daydream. And when you have a partner, daydream with your partner, with your family and friends. Maybe join a finance club or get a savings buddy. Start a group chat about investing. My boyfriend, we'll call him Fulano, he did not have any savings when we first met. He made twice as much as I did, but had nothing in savings. And yet I had this robust retirement account. When I started sharing my retirement plan with him, my vision of retiring in Puerto Rico and spending every day on the beach, he got really excited about that. And he wanted to know, how do I get there? I want to be there with you. And how do we get there faster? And so oftentimes we will plan together. What if we retire at this age versus that age? We can have this amount versus that amount. Should we make a sacrifice to the lifestyle so that we can retire sooner? Or should we spend more lavishly and retire later? Just having those discussions with the people you love, I think, is going to get you into the habit of saving because you're planning together. And the focus isn't so much on what you're putting in now, the focus is on what you get out of it later. I would also say it's important to soak up all the education that's available to you, make decisions that align with your vision, and commit to checking in at least once a year. It's really important not only to create the plan, but to check in on it.
So that was just an outstanding episode. Judy and Jennifer provided some excellent suggestions to make saving easier and more effective. I hope these moments have inspired many of you to create a vision for your life in retirement and take action on making those plans a reality. It's fascinating to me how extraordinary shifts in mindset and behavior can result from open and honest conversations. So now let's go back to season one for a snippet from our episode titled Building Your Retirement Confidence. Here, Rachel Wecker, one of my favorite people, senior retirement strategist, and I discuss the importance of creating a roadmap to retirement success. We also walk through a practical framework that can help you prioritize your finances. Here's a clip. So, Rachel, is there some kind of framework that people can use to think about their finances and really set them on the road for retirement success?
We have a savings hierarchy, and it informs all of the education we provide and the tools that we make available. And it's pretty straightforward. It needs to start with an emergency savings account, so you have that safety net that we've talked about. And if people can do that while at the same time as managing their day-to-day expenses and get started saving for retirement, we think that they should do that because it's so important to get started for longer-term goals as early as you can. But if that's just not possible, we tell people to get that emergency savings started as soon as possible, really attack those bills to get them to a manageable level, and then start working on retirement savings. And once you've got that on a good path, then start to focus on your other goals.
So, Rachel, any context you can provide for listeners on how much emergency savings they should have?
So we break that into two pieces. Psychologically, building up a decent chunk of money can be intimidating. So we will suggest that people get that ball rolling and work towards maybe a more modest sum to get started. But ultimately, we would say that just as other experts in the field would say, 3 to 6 months is a really important sum to target. And if we've learned anything over the pandemic is the importance of having that safety net. And without that safety net, people needed to turn to the one place they had resources and tap those retirement savings, which we know is not optimal for improving long-term outcomes.
For sure. So, Rachel, is there anything that people can do to feel better about the financial decisions they need to make today to prepare them for the future so they can continue to stay on track for a really great retirement?
Yes. And I love that question because I think it's one of the really bright spots that we have uncovered throughout our experience and our research. And that's that we consistently see people's confidence increase as soon as they engage in having a financial plan. And we know that no one's financial situation improved radically overnight. But having an actionable plan can have that kind of impact on how people feel about money and their confidence levels.
So that was a great clip. Rachel's insights on financial planning were valuable. She reminded us that building a solid financial foundation starts with the basics, like creating an emergency savings fund, and grows into a comprehensive plan for your future. And she shared how by taking these steps now, you can increase your confidence and set yourself on the path to a successful retirement. All right, let's switch over to another episode, and this is from season two, where host Christine Akins was joined by certified financial planner professionals Samantha Smith and Eric Lubkert to review a range of frequently asked retirement questions. Together, they covered some critical aspects of retirement planning, including healthcare and Social Security. So let's listen.
So the next question that was posed to us is, how can I prepare for the cost of health insurance and long-term care insurance? Sam, let's start with you.
Absolutely. And healthcare is one of the things that make it harder for individuals to retire prior to age 65, which is when Medicare kicks in. Medicare is the governmental retiree medical program. 65 is the age in which you can sign up for that program. However, there is an application window of 3 months prior to 3 months after that date of birth, but it's a very fixed and rigid date. You can't really flex that if you're retiring early. When you think about Medicare, there's a lot of different programs out there, a lot of different parts to your Medicare and medical benefits. Part A being that's your primary, that's going to be the hospital insurance. But knowing what additional benefits you might need in retirement and what the pricing can cover, there is open enrollment in different programs that you can look at to find out what in your area that coverage and the coverage cost may be. So long-term care can be expensive, and looking at your Medicare benefits, they don't cover for long-term care in perpetuity. So if you think of illnesses like Alzheimer's and dementia, where you may need to be hospitalized potentially for life, that's not going to be covered under a Medicare benefit, but it would be covered under your long-term care insurance so you can get that care that you need later in life. Another thing to consider is if your employer offers a high deductible health plan, you may have the opportunity to also save in an HSA or health savings account, which gives you the opportunity to save ongoing for healthcare tax-free if you're using it for qualified healthcare expenses. And those HSAs get to continuously roll over from year to year. So that can be a retirement savings tool as well, because you can take that HSA with you into retirement and also use that for your healthcare expenses in retirement, whether that's paying for Medicare premiums or paying for some of the out-of-pocket costs that you may receive with those benefits in retirement.
The next question that we received is, should I take Social Security when I retire? Eric, how would you respond to that?
Thanks, Christine. Oftentimes, this is the primary or maybe the largest source of their retirement income. So unlike Medicare, as Sam was referring to previously, you do have options as to when you begin taking Social Security payments. So there's what we refer to as the full retirement age, which varies based on birth year, but is generally around age 66 or 67. And then you can take it early as age 62, or you can take it late. And basically, there are trade-offs associated with taking it early or taking it late. So in regards to when you take Social Security, the earlier you take it, the smaller the payments, but for more years. And the longer you wait is the opposite. You have larger payments, but over fewer years. And you are, for the most part, locking in that decision once made. While in isolation, the decision is generally a bet on life expectancy, there are some other variables one should consider. So as an example, if you retire at age 65, but you don't take your Social Security payments until 68, that means you'll have 3 years where you're going to have to replace that income from other sources.
For some retired people, they still find a way to work. What might they need to consider while they're still collecting Social Security?
So this part is really determined by their age. So if the retiree is full retirement age, there's really no impact to their Social Security benefits other than the taxability or potential taxability of those benefits. But if they are claiming their benefits before full retirement age, so claiming the benefits as early as age 62, then Social Security does limit their income. So each year they have income limits, and any money they make above that, then their Social Security benefits are reduced by $1 for every two they make above that limit. So let's just say they made an extra $20,000 above that limit this year. That means their Social Security benefits will be reduced by $10,000 in that year. So that's where if you are continuing to work or considering to work, waiting to claim your benefits until after full retirement age can give you larger payments for life, but also keep that reduction going forward. I would add that when it comes to Social Security, even if you have many years before you're even considering taking that benefit, go online to ssa.gov, that's the Social Security website, and keep up with your payments, the amounts, and that benefit, especially because those benefits are based on your highest 35 years worth of earnings. You want to make sure that those are correct. It's a lot easier to go back and see what last year's earnings were 2 years than trying to go back 20 to know if they're correct or missing. So that is something that at any age, even though it's far from thinking about taking that benefit, it can be something good to look at as you go.
We've received a few questions circling around this idea of in retirement. So Eric, the first question is, how can I create an income stream in retirement?
Yeah, good question. I'll give a little bit of an overview here. We do have another podcast episode referred to as Understanding Retirement Income for those that are looking to dig a little bit deeper. So once someone retires, probably the first place to start, assuming you have a decent understanding of your expenses, is to add up any income sources that you have. We just talked about Social Security, which is a popular income source. Some people might have pensions or other income received from former employers. Anything else beyond that might have to come from one's portfolio. And then there are a variety of strategies, some that are focused on specific investments or some that are more focused on a sustainable withdrawal rate. We referred to that 4% rule of thumb before, and while everyone's situation is different, that's a good way to understand how much you might be able to take from your portfolio in addition to other income sources.
So that was outstanding. Eric and Sam's insights provided our listeners with a clearer understanding of the steps they can take to secure their financial future. So whether you're just starting to plan or you're already retired, this episode was packed with valuable insight to help you make informed decisions. If you haven't listened to the entire episode, I'd recommend going back and taking a listen. So now, on to a highlight from our most recent season. In this episode, our season 3 host, Francisco Negron, head of T. Rowe Price Retirement Plan Services, was joined by Roger Young, a certified financial planner professional. They talked about the right knowledge in planning and how it can help you make more informed decisions to minimize your tax burden and maximize your retirement savings. So here's a clip from Tax Planning Strategies to Help Maximize Savings to and Through Retirement.
Excellent. So let's go a level deeper. I still think it's complex, but let's keep going. So what are some of the common types of taxes that people need to think about before and during retirement? And actually, also, why are taxes different in retirement? Could you talk about those 2 points?
Sure. So we'll talk about 2 main types of taxes, income taxes and estate taxes. Now, people also have property taxes and other things, but in terms of today's topic, income taxes and estate taxes. Within the topic of income taxes, an important distinction is what is called ordinary income versus capital gains taxes. The capital gains taxes, those rates are generally lower. So we'll come back to all of that. You know, income taxes for a lot of people in their working years can be fairly straightforward. You know, work income is reported to them on a W-2, and that's ordinary income. And then you get to partly offset that with a standard deduction. So most people use that standard deduction. So it's a pretty easy calculation. There's not necessarily a lot you can do about it. Now, in retirement, there are new rules to consider. Things like Social Security has a very interesting way of being taxed. There are different types of retirement accounts and the distributions on those. You might have more gains from selling investments in retirement than when you're working. Medicare premiums are another interesting facet. Technically, those premiums are not a tax, but the income you have determines what your premiums are. So therefore, it's kind of like a tax. So all of these are pretty new for retirees. So as I mentioned earlier, most people don't have enough assets to worry about estate taxes, so we're going to focus primarily on income taxes today.
Well, that's a good idea. So what are the key tax principles individuals need to keep in mind to make the most of their savings?
So we'll talk about 2 principles. First, your taxes on investment returns, you know, the gains and other income that you have for taxable accounts, those can create a drag on your performance. So, you know, we talk in the investment world about the power of compounding. Well, those taxes can dampen the power of compounded growth. So one principle is to reduce that drag. And ways to do that include delaying income, so you're taxed on it later, or shifting away from ordinary income sources to capital gains, which again, are typically at a lower rate. So we'll talk a little more about ways to do that. The second principle is to avoid bunching your income into, you know, specific years that would push you into a higher tax bracket. So for example, if you can steadily pay taxes with a 24% top rate, federal rate today, instead of occasionally being taxed on chunks of that income at the next rate up 32% in some years, you're going to save money on taxes. So the way you take money out of accounts can make a big difference. You know, the impact of taxes on your investment strategy is going to vary based on your personal circumstances, primarily your tax rate. The higher your marginal tax rate, the more value there is to spend time on an investment strategy that factors taxes into the decision making. But even so, even if you're not in a super high tax rate, you know, some of the strategies that we're going to talk about are options for investors even in lower tax brackets. So for example, the difference between being taxed at 12% and 22%, which are 2 of the lower brackets right next to each other, you know, that can be a big deal for someone who's not super wealthy. So, you know, for all people, it's worth at least spending some time thinking about these principles in their taxes.
So it really is just as important consideration as the accumulation and how you're going to turn your accumulated balance in retirement into an income stream. You really need to understand what these taxes are and how they're going to cut into that so that you spread it out. I mean, it's one of the takeaways that I'm getting from what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think we in the industry recognize accumulation is relatively straightforward. Kind of like I said, the taxes while you're working are relatively straightforward. A lot of things can get more complicated, and you might need some more advice as you head into retirement.
Excellent.
So that was a fantastic episode. I don't know about you, but I'm almost through my popcorn at this point. This has been such an exciting journey. Roger's breakdown of income taxes helped reveal how you can strategically manage your savings to minimize tax liabilities. He helped us to understand how the tax implications of your retirement decisions are just as important as the accumulation phase of your retirement journey. So as we start to wrap up our best of episode, let's take a moment to revisit when we took a dive into the history and evolution of one of the most important financial innovations in retirement planning, target date solutions. In this clip, Francisco Negron chats with head of target date strategies at T. Rowe Price, Wyatt Lee, and also certified financial planner professional Stuart Ritter. They talked about how these investment strategies emerged, their growing importance in 401k plans, and why they become such an important cornerstone for so many retirement savers. If you've ever wondered how target date strategies came to be and why they might be important for your retirement success, this conversation will provide you with valuable insights. So let's listen.
Wyatt, maybe you could talk about a little bit of the history of how we ended up with target date solutions in the first place.
So if you think about what many people in the defined contribution or 401k market are asked to do, right? They're asked to save for the retirement and then build an investment portfolio. Plan sponsors, employers were seeing investors not do a great job at this. And so you started to see target date solutions first emerge in the mid-90s as an alternative to just having a stock fund and a bond fund that investors had to put together on their own. From there, they really did take off in the 401k market because employers saw that their employees needed a solution to improve their investment outcomes. My guess is most people will have had some sort of exposure to target dates within their retirement plan. T. Rowe was one of the early entrants in the space. We launched back in 2002. We looked a little bit different back then, and since then, we've really become well known as an innovator and a pioneer in terms of how we build our strategies and how the portfolio manager and the portfolio management team continues to think about making sure that they're well positioned going forward. What I'd wrap up, though, is to say, if you think about what's happened over the last two decades, the idea of target date strategies as a simplified investment solution has really become the biggest investment theme in the defined contribution space. We see lots of participants using them. We see them staying in the portfolios, right? So one concern with investing is that people tend to move money at the wrong times, but we see vast, vast majority of investors in target date solutions staying the course even during periods of market volatility. And if you were to look, we probably see well more than 90% of 401k plans offering a target date solution. So I'd probably say it wouldn't be overkill to think of them as one of the most important financial innovations in history.
Yeah, no, it definitely it is an important innovation. And it's not surprising that 401k plans, defined contribution plans, would be where you would see them more prevalent because, you know, that has such a long time horizon.
And to add to that, think about many people in a 401k plan, right? That might be their biggest pool of investable assets. And you're asking someone who has a career that may have nothing to do with investing to make an investment decision for the rest of their working life and probably beyond retirement.
And to maintain that decision.
Exactly.
Yes, that's
and
the part.
So to have something that can be simply packaged where you have that professional oversight on top becomes super valuable.
Excellent. Very interesting. So, Stuart, I was going to ask you to talk a little bit more about the appeal of these solutions, but I feel like we've already started talking about that. Why don't we just build on that and what these portfolios might offer to investors?
One of the ways I encourage people to think about what a target date solution can do for you is to think about driving your car. And I want to talk, just stay with me for a minute, I want to talk a little bit about your car's transmission. Now, there's a thing out there called a manual transmission. And a manual transmission gives you more control over the driving experience, gets better gas mileage. They're often cheaper. But with all that comes more responsibility. You've got to be monitoring traffic flow, and there's an extra pedal down there, and you've got a stick you got to move, and you're worried about the engine speed. And because there's so much more to do to drive a car with a manual transmission, a lot of people have realized it gets distracting from our main focus, which is driving the car. So the vast majority of people, like north of 90% of cars sold in North America, are automatic transmission cars. And what people do is they let the professional that built the transmission do all the changing that needs to be done as they're driving down the road. And that's what a target date solution offers to investors for retirement. You don't have to be the one who's getting in there and fussing with it every quarter and wondering when you should shift from more stocks to a little bit less in stocks. There's a professional involved that's doing that for you and gives you the opportunity then to focus on other things and not have to worry so much about the investment portfolio component of your plan.
Stuart, I'm glad you went to transmissions because I thought you were going to make me feel like an Uber driver for the defined contribution marketplace for a second there.
Not at all.
Whenever Stuart begins with stay with me for a minute with the analogy, I sit back as I know it's going to be a good one.
Well, thanks. You are the professional engineer in this whole thing, Wyatt.
Wyatt, you want to build on that?
Yeah, I'll take that as a compliment.
You can be the race car driver in this analogy if you want.
Absolutely.
Well, I think Stuart's probably spot on there, right? Because in some ways, building a target date solution is an engineering challenge, right? There are a lot of decisions that ultimately have to be made. Right, we have to think about what's that right mix of stocks and bonds over time. We have to think about what we have in our stock portfolio. How much is in the U.S.? How much outside the U.S.? How does the bond portfolio work? How much, again, do we have in high yield bonds? So there are a lot of decisions that have to be made, not only for the long term, but also really navigating for the short term. One thing I think that people should think about here is about if you're choosing this kind of one-stop solution, think and spend some time about who you're partnering with in terms of that solution, right? We've talked about mixes of stocks and bonds. We've talked about different types of management styles. You want to work with a manager who has a lot of tools at the disposal, right? Partnering with a provider potentially who offers a wide range of investment strategies is really important because if you're buying somebody's target date strategy, it's not just one single portfolio, it's lots of allocations. So you're buying the collective intelligence of the manager who you're working with. Right? You want to make sure you have somebody who has the pieces to build these things, to build that transmission in a way that you have confidence that it's going to perform the way you want to.
So that was great. Wyatt and Stuart highlighted how these strategies offer a simple yet powerful way to navigate the complexities of investing for your future. I couldn't have said it better myself. It's moments like these that remind me why I love doing this podcast and connecting with all of you. So thanks all for listening to this special episode. But don't be concerned. We have plenty more amazing content coming your way in future episodes. If you enjoyed this trip down memory lane, be sure to share this episode with your friends, leave us a review, and subscribe if you haven't done so already. So we ask that you please tune in for our next episode, where we will kick off season 4 of our podcast, and we'll have a new host, my friend, Kim Zook, T. Rowe Price, Head of Retirement for U.S. Intermediaries. We could not be more excited to have Kim host this show. For the next episode, my colleague Roger Young and I will be joining her to discuss the evolution and future of 401k plans. So, Kim, why don't you take this opportunity to introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael, and hello, listeners. My name is Kim Zook, and I'm excited to be your host for season 4.
Thanks, Kim. I look forward to hearing you on these new episodes, and I think you're going to bring a lot of intellectual curiosity and personality to these conversations that I'm really excited about. Again, I'm Michael Davis. Thank you for joining me on this journey. Be well, and I wish you all many confident tomorrows to come.
T. Rowe Price, retire with confidence. This episode of Confident Conversations on Retirement is provided for general and educational purposes only and is not intended to provide legal, tax, or investment advice. This podcast does not provide recommendations concerning investments, investment strategies, or account types. It is not individualized to the needs of any specific investor and not intended to suggest any particular investment action is appropriate for you, nor is it intended to serve as the primary basis for investment decision making. The principal value of target date investment options is not guaranteed at any time, including at or after the target date, which is the approximate year an investor plans to retire. These options typically invest in a broad range of underlying portfolios that include stocks, bonds, and short-term investments and are subject to the risks of different areas of the market. In addition, the objectives of target date products typically change over time to become more conservative. Investors will need to consider their own circumstances before making an investment decision. All investments involve risk, including potential loss of principal. The views contained herein are as of the date noted on the material and are subject to change without notice. These views may differ from those of other T. Rowe Price Group companies and/or associates. Copyright 2024, T. Rowe Price, all rights reserved. T. Rowe Price, invest with confidence, retire with confidence. The Bighorn Sheep Design and Confident Conversations, collectively and/or apart, are trademarks of T. Rowe Price Group Incorporated, all rights reserved. T. Rowe Price Investment Services Incorporated, distributor. T. Rowe Price Associates Incorporated, investment advisor.